Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, RunCatalina.com. We have the Catalina Island Marathon, the 40th anniversary, coming up on Saturday, March 11th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes. Definitely subscribe to our Endurance World newsletter. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, two-time Olympian, two-time ITU world champion, 2016 Olympic triathlon gold medalist, Gwen Jorgensen joins us. Gwen, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Bob.
Oh, Gwen, always such an honor to have you. So first, being a mom-to-be, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm excited you're asking me about this because I love talking about my pregnancy. I'm doing well. I had a pretty rough first trimester. I had a lot of food aversions and couldn't really do much, was really fatigued. But now I'm doing much better now that I'm in the second trimester and I'm finally feeling a little more normal.
Good for you. And just this, so your plan after you have your little one, will you come back in 2018 and start training and racing again?
Yeah, you know, I think I have a, you know, when you're pregnant, a lot of hormones are released and ligaments are stretched and things like that. So, you know, I'm going to be kind of cautious and, you know, just go slowly. But I would like to get back into racing as soon as possible. I miss racing so much, and the race season hasn't even started this year for me to start watching, really. So, you know, I think as soon as I can, I'll try to get back into sport. And I'm trying to stay fit right now. I'm definitely not training, but I'd say I'm exercising, so I'm trying to stay fit so that I can have a quick comeback. But again, I'm just going to kind of listen to my body, and I, you know that things change in your body, and that I'm going to be aware of that and just make sure I keep myself healthy.
So Gwen, were you one of those kids growing up who always wanted to be an Olympian, would watch the Olympics on TV and was like, man, I just want to be on a podium one day?
You know, when you first started saying that, I thought you were going to say you're one of the people that grew up always wanted to be a mom. And I was like, yes, yes. you know, like growing up, I always wanted to be a mom. But for the Olympics, when I was little, I was a swimmer. I started swimming competitively at age 8. And I just loved being in the water, really wanted to go to the Olympics and swimming. And I just wasn't good enough. Like, I wasn't even good enough to go to nationals, not even junior nationals. So that dream died pretty young, and I didn't even think it was an option after that. You know, I was in middle school, high school, and I was like, well, there's just no way I'm ever going to be an Olympian. So I kind of just gave that up and moved on.
But you were looking at colleges, but you know, you were both a runner and a swimmer. If you were getting letters, did you want to run track or did you want to swim in college?
I really wanted to swim, and I wasn't good enough to get a scholarship anywhere, and I had some running success, and my parents, I think, were kind of, you know, I'd come home, and there'd be letters on the table, would be like, Gwen, look, there's a letter, you know, for you from so-and-so college, and I'd look at the return address, and it would say track and field, and I would just be like, throw it out, I'm not even looking at it. I didn't want to run. My passion was in swimming, and I think my parents, you know, they were very respectful. I think they a little bit tried to encourage me to run because they knew I could get a scholarship in running and not swimming. So just to help them out because they paid for my college, they were kind of encouraging me to go that route. But I just had a huge passion for swimming. So I started swimming. I was a walk-on at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And after 3 years, I felt like I had kind of reached my potential. And I remember calling my high school track coach and just saying, you know, I think I'm ready to stop doing swimming. And he just said, oh, you should run at Madison. And I thought he was nuts because, I mean, D1 level is pretty intense.
You're right.
I mean, you can't really just join a team. So I but I don't know, he talked to the coach and did a time trial, and it was on the team did a race that next week, and then eventually it was on scholarship, so got a little bit of money back for mom and dad.
So in 2008, you seventh at the NCAA National Outdoor Championships, 5,000 meters, 2009, you're Big Ten champion, both the three and the five. Yep. Had you even thought about the sport of triathlon up until that point? I mean, here you got a swimming background and a running background now.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I didn't even know that ITU draft legal Olympic triathlon existed. I knew of Ironman and
right.
long course and things like that, but I just had no idea that this sport that I now absolutely love existed. So, that thought wasn't on my mind.
Well, and meanwhile, you're in graduate school. You're getting your CPA.
Yep.
You're ready to start work. You have a job, right, Ernst & Young? You're ready to start working.
Yep.
And when were you approached by Barb Lindquist and USA Triathlon saying, hey, have you ever thought about this sport?
Yeah, Barb was the first one that told me what ITU draft legal triathlon was and that it was in the Olympics. And I remember her calling me. I was still in school, but I had a job lined up with Ernst & Young that I was going to start when school was over. And Barb was telling me, you know, on paper, Gwen, you are better than I was. And I was an Olympian, so you should be, you know, it'll be easy for you to be an Olympian. And I just kind of laughed at her, and I said, there's no way. And I said, look, I tried to be an Olympian when I was younger, and I failed. I'm not good enough. Let's just move on. I have this great job with Ernst & Young. I want to be a tax accountant. Like, that's, you know, where I thought my life was headed and what I wanted to do. So had a lot of changes. And I'm just really thankful, I guess, that, you know, Barb stuck with me. She was a really great mentor for me. She said, you know, why don't you just try triathlon on the side while you work for Ernst & Young? And Barb would call me every week, and, you know, she'd talk to me about, I'd fall over at stop signs because I couldn't unclip, and she talked me through that and just say, you know, that's a normal thing when you've never ridden a bike before. And she'd also talk to me about just like work-life balance, and she was just a really great person to talk to, and she had a really great listening ability and just was able to really connect with me. And, you know, without her, I wouldn't have gotten started in the sport of triathlon. So I have a lot to thank her for.
So here you are, you've got this job with Ernst & Young, and obviously you go to college to get a job and get a profession. What did your parents yep. say when you say, you know what, I know I've gone to college and I've got the CPA and I've got the job thing, but I'm thinking of putting it on hold for a bit to pursue this Olympic dream?
Yeah, they were really supportive, more supportive than I was, I guess, and more enthusiastic about
yeah.
it than I was. They're like, do it. They're like, you can live at home for a while off of us. You can, you know, we'll help you financially. And I'm like, no. Like, I'm like, if I'm doing triathlon, I need to do it myself and make a living at it and be able to support myself. I'm like, I went to college. I'm not going to, in my head, I didn't want to go back and regress and not be able to fully support myself. So for me, the big thing was I definitely was not going to do triathlon unless I could support myself financially. So that's, you know, a big reason why I was working for Ernst & Young for a while I was doing triathlon. And looking back at it, you know, it's been a little bit silly because I, you know, how much time you have to dedicate to be a full-time triathlete is just, I mean, it's all day. It's a full-time
right.
job. And
yeah.
to think that I was able to balance both was pretty incredible and at the same time pretty foolish.
Well, you got to pursue that stuff. So a good friend of mine, Tom Schuler, one of the top cyclists around, he told me in those early days, 2010, when he was riding with you, just learning to handle the bike. I mean, that's a brand new gig. You're talking about trying to be one of the best in the world, and you're learning a sport that a lot of people have been doing for a big part of their life. How hard
yep.
was learning to ride the bike and staying upright and accelerating and you know, not falling over at stoplights?
Yeah, I feel like I'm still learning. I still say, like, all the time, I'm a rookie on the bike, but it's been quite a few years, and I have progressed, and I'm definitely a good, I think, great cyclist now. Like, I've really progressed that, and those early days were really difficult. And, you know, I have a lot of just thankfulness for Tom, because Tom, you know, I wasn't paying him. I wasn't giving anything to him, and he just would take me on group rides and then stick with me after the group rides and take me to a parking lot and do skills with me. And Tom also introduced me to my husband, Pat Lemieux. So, I love Tom, and he's a great guy. And just those early days, I remember his patience with me. I mean, oh my goodness, I don't know how he had so much patience, because I was pretty horrible.
So you mentioned Pat Lemieux, your husband. Wednesday night rides. What were your impressions of Pat at first?
I was on this Wednesday night ride that I went on every week, and Tom Schuler was on it because he was always on these rides helping me out. And Pat happened to be in town, and Tom knew Pat and said, "Pat, you're a professional cyclist. We have Gwen here. I'd like you to meet Gwen, and could you just give her a few pointers on this ride?" And so that's how it started out, and Pat had to tow me back up to the group a few times when I got dropped. It was a pretty hard ride for me. I would actually love to go back and see if I could stay with the group now. But so back then it was pretty rough, and I just remember Pat at the end of the ride said, "Hey, do you want to go out to dinner tonight?" And I was just kind of like hemming and hawing, and I'm like, "I don't know. I was like, I got work in the morning. You know, normally I get up at 4 a.m. I don't really want a late night." And he's like, "We don't have to go out." As soon as he removed the question, I was like, no, like, I want to go. So he got out his phone and, you know, started putting my number in his phone. And I remember just being in such awe that he could ride without hands on the handlebar and insert my phone number into his phone. So, that's kind of how it all started. We went to dinner that night. And, I guess the rest is kind of history.
It's sort of kind of history. So what was your first professional triathlon and how'd it go?
So my first triathlon was in Claremont, Florida.
Yep.
And that's where I got my elite card. And, I'd love to look back and actually look at the results in more details, but I remember just getting annihilated on the bike. I had been riding in Wisconsin over winter, so a lot of indoor training, and just the draft legal was something that, you know, to ride a bike for the first time and then to do it drafting is something that was really hard for me. And I realized after that first race that I had a lot of work to do, but I also realized that I had a lot of potential.
So, you know, Pat at that time is a professional cyclist, but he eventually gave up his career as a professional cyclist to support your triathlon goals. And you know, that was fairly early in the relationship. Did that surprise you?
It was very early in our relationship. You know, we were just kind of dating, and I remember he was flying over for a race that I had in Madrid, and he had a return ticket, and he was just like, "I'm not going to take the return. I want to stay here with you. I want to help you." And I was just in shock. I was like, first of all, I was very money conscious back then. I was like, whoa, what about the wasted money of the return trip? And then
you're an accountant. Of course you're thinking about money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And then after that, I just, you know, I said, "I really want you to think about this, Pat," because I really didn't want him to resent me later in life. Or, you know, I mean, we were just dating, and for him to give up what he was doing to support me full time and to live with me abroad and, you know, just take care of me was a huge investment on his part. And, you know, he was just like, "Look, when I've already thought about it, I've already made my decision, I'm doing it." And I was really happy, but at the same time, I just wanted him to make sure that he had thought it through, and that's what he really wanted to do. And he's the world's best caretaker. Anyone that's met me has met Pat, and they know how good he takes care of me. So, you know, he's a huge asset, and he's, without him, I wouldn't have won gold this past year. So I'm really grateful that he has supported me.
What do you feel was your breakthrough race where you felt you could compete with some of the world's best triathletes?
I think Stockholm, and I'm really bad at the year. I think it was 2013, maybe.
Okay.
But I remember I came out of the water top five. I had a really strong bike, and I remember going into that race, and everyone said, "Gwen, you shouldn't race this. This bike course is really technical. It's going to be really bad for you. You shouldn't do it. Like, just skip it. Go to another race." And I remember I had a great swim, and then the bike, I was up front, like, in great position the whole time and had a really strong, solid bike, and then had a great run. And I won that race, and I just remember thinking, wow, like, I can do this. And I really felt like I proved to myself that I can be a good cyclist, and I can stick with the best on even technical hard courses.
I remember talking to Pat, and he said, you know, what people underestimate is they think that that Gwen needs a easy bike course to be a factor.
Yep.
And the reality is the tougher the bike course, the better Gwen does, because she can still run great after a tough bike ride.
Yeah. You know, I don't look at stats too much, but Pat says the same thing to me and Jamie. And
yeah.
If you look at like past data, like my biggest winning margins come from tough races like Auckland or, you know, like the Rio course or
sure.
something with a big hill or technical, I'm able to run fast off that. So we, you know, I think Jamie's done a great job at training me for races, and we do a lot of race specific training. And this past year in 2016, I wasn't doing race specific training for races because I was just focusing on Rio. But if you look back, the races that I do specifically train for, Jamie does such a great job at getting me ready and prepared for those races that I do feel like I'm able to execute and have a good race.
Well, and you look at it, so you go to your second at the test event for London Olympic course, which puts you
yep.
in the 2012 Olympic Games. Did it surprise you to make that? I mean, really, you started in 2010, and here you are making an Olympic team in 2012.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, that was actually a really hard time in my career as a triathlete. I felt like I didn't deserve it. I felt there was a lot of, I just felt like there was a lot of people looking at me and saying, you know, oh, she's not a triathlete, she's only a runner, or, you know, that was the perception I had, whether that was true or not, that's how I felt at the time. And, you know, it took me a while to actually realize, no, you know, I have been an athlete my entire life, I've worked really hard, and I am a triathlete, and for me, I remember the turning point mentally was I sat down with USAT High Performance, and they said, Gwen, do you want to go to the Olympics? I know you qualified, but nobody's probably asked you, do you actually want to do this? And that was kind of a turning point when I said, yes, like, I do want to go to the Olympics, and I want to represent my country, and I want to do as best as I can, and I do believe I have a shot at getting a medal. So, you know, I think that was a great learning experience for me, and that was also something that really helped me join our daily performance group with Jamie Turner and really want to improve and become the world's best, you know, swimmer, biker, runner, and not just be able to perform on a runner's course, but like we talked about earlier, be able to perform on courses that are actually biker's courses and be able to dominate on those sorts of courses.
How do you think the swimming and the cycling helped your running? Because obviously you were a really, really good runner in college. Did you feel you became a better runner because of the, you know, doing some of that anaerobic work on the bike?
I for sure became a better runner. I mean, you can just look at my times.
Yeah.
You know, I've done a few open 10Ks
yeah.
Since I've with Jamie, and I've dropped like 2 minutes from my college time. So, you know, I've become a lot better runner, and I attribute that to building strength. You know, I put on muscle, I've
yeah.
put on weight, and then as well, just the stronger I got in the swim and the bike, the less fatigue I was on the run. So Jamie was just great at being able to, he's great at helping me build strength in the swim and bike so that when it comes to the run, I'm able to run well.
So it's funny. I tell running coaches all the time. I'm like, God, if you incorporated some cross training with your athletes, one, you'd keep them healthier, and two, I guarantee they'd run faster. Do you feel that whole? A lot of times, the coaching mentality is: if you're a runner, you run; if you're a swimmer, you swim. We don't really cross over because that's not going to help you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard thing to say. You know, I think, you know, because in triathlon, you have to be able to run. It's not about running a fast 10K. It's about running a fast 10K after swimming and biking.
Yes.
And I think those are two completely different things, and that's where Jamie, I think, really excels, is being able to really prepare us to run a fast 10K fatigued and after swimming and biking. So, you know, it's, I'm not really sure. You know, I haven't done too much looking at, you know, other things. You know, I know when I was in college, I was doing a little bit of swimming while I was running just because I couldn't up my mileage so quickly. But, you know, when I was swimming, I was just swimming, and that's kind of the mentality. And I think, you know, that does work. And at the same time, I think everyone's different and everybody's bodies respond differently.
Sure. So after you go to your first Olympics, 2012, you flat and end up 38th. The experience of that first Olympics, from being, you know, a little girl going, I want to go to the Olympics. Now you're actually there and you're in London, which was one of the greatest Olympics. Obviously, your racing experience probably was something that you would like to have been better. But the experience of the Olympics, how was that?
Oh, amazing. You know, I really got to experience it all. I went to opening ceremonies. I had my race, and then I was able to actually go to other events. And going to other events and cheering on other USA athletes was a huge highlight, as well as just, I think, like, one of my favorite things is just going to the dining hall and meeting the different athletes and sitting down at tables and just that, having that community, and everyone was there to perform their best, and just having that camaraderie was something that was really special. And then I got to go to the closing ceremonies as well. So I feel like I really got to do the whole experience. And it was something that, you know, I went to the London Olympics wanting to do well and have fun. And I came out saying, I'm going to Rio and I want another shot and I want to do this again. And I really felt like I had more in me. So it was really a encouraging and motivating event.
So you came away hungry for Rio.
For sure.
That's cool. Hey, so how did Pat propose?
On a bike ride. We it was actually, like, I remember it was snowing.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even planning. It was like the first day of snow in Minnesota, and I wasn't planning on riding that day. And Pat's like, oh, it's starting to snow. Like, we should go ride our mountain bikes and it'll be fun. And I was like, sure, why not? So I went on a ride, and I remember he did a little session and I was just kind of, you know, doing skill stuff. And on the way home, we stopped over a bridge and Pat said, oh, it's really pretty. We should take a picture. And I was like, okay. So, you know, I got off my bike. It's off season. Like, I don't mind stopping, whatever. And I remember looking and thinking, it's not that pretty. Like, it's kind of windy. You can't really see much. And then I remember him saying, like, I love you so much. I'm going to love you forever. And I remember just getting a little bit upset because I was like, Pat, you can't say you're going to love me forever. Because at this point, I kind of felt like, is he going to, like, I was wondering for a couple months, like, was he going to propose? Was he not? And he just got down on one knee and he's like, what if I do this? And I was in shock. I like took a step back and then I slipped and fell. And it was amazing. It was a total surprise. Like, I really had no idea he was going to propose that day. And it was just something that was, like, we hadn't planned on riding. So it was just, like, so out of the blue that that's a day I'll never forget. And I really think that's the best day I've ever had in my life. And I don't think it will be trumped until maybe I have the baby. But,
that's so cool.
I mean, it was just an amazing day.
I love that. So the winning streak. Over the span of a couple of years, you win 13 in a row, both world championships in 2014 and 15. When you have a streak like that, all of a sudden, you have a bullseye on your back. Everybody's looking to knock you off. How hard was that to deal with, knowing every race you went to, you're number one, everybody's after you?
That really didn't bother me that much because I wasn't focused on the winning streak. I didn't care about that. Like, I just wanted to go to every race and execute as best I could. You know, I think the hardest part probably about that was just being asked about it over and over again.
By people like me. Yeah.
and having, like, you know, when you are successful, you are asked to do a lot of media and a lot of extra, you know, interviews and things like that. And just the time commitments, that probably was a little more, that was probably more hard than actually, like, I never really felt like, I don't know, I went into the race feeling confident and knowing that if I could execute everything that I've been training for, that at the end of the day, I would be happy. And so for me, that's what I tried to do every race. And, you know, I felt as well, like, you know, going into the Olympics and having that winning streak, I would have rather been I liked being on that side versus trying to be scrambling and trying to figure out, like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do to improve? I felt like Jamie and I, we really created a formula that we knew was working, and, you know, we were constantly trying to innovate and improve, but we also knew what we were doing was working. And so, you know, I could go into races confident and knowing that, you know, I just needed to execute on what I could. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, Jamie has really instilled in me processes over outcomes, and that's something that really calmed me as well. I knew that if I just focused on the technique and the processes, that that's what was important and outcomes didn't matter.
So you win the test event in 2015 in Rio. So you've got the Olympic spot, but also you've won on that course, on the Rio course. It'd be easy to say, okay, I get this. Now I'm just going to focus on next season. And, you know, I do well on that course. But you really focused on that course. And the type of stuff you did with the Red Bull folks, where you're practicing technical downhill in the back of a motorcycle. Talk a little bit about all the different things you did to get ready for that one day.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the 2016 year was, we took a little bit of a different approach, which you can kind of view that as a risk or something, but, you know, we didn't do what we had done in the past. You know, Jamie and I really just focused on Rio, and we spent the whole year preparing for Rio and training for Rio like there was no other events. We weren't, you know, doing race-specific stuff for different races I went to. We were only doing, you know, hill workouts and strength workouts, and we did a little month training camp in New Plymouth to get some good hill riding and strength work in. And as well, I did that Red Bull camp where we worked on my descending skills, because, you know, it's something that I'm constantly trying to improve my bike skills. Like I said earlier, I really want to be the best biker, the best cyclist. So I was hungry to learn a lot. And, you know, I remember Red Bull shut down this road and we just went down this mountain, and then they'd shuttle me back up and I'd go down again, and they brought in professional cyclists like Tour de France winner, Tim Johnson cycle cross rider. So they brought in all these people to help me, and it was just incredible. And, you know, I had a lot of support, and the whole year, the whole focus, I mean, for 4 years, the focus was Rio. So the year of 2016 was just even more focused towards that.
Now, did your mom know that you were going on the motorcycle on these downhills? What did she know about that?
So it was kind of a secret camp, and I kept it secret from my mom as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was a secret from the world and my mom. My mom's like, what are you doing in California? I'm like, oh, nothing, just, you know, a little bit of riding. Gosh, she read the article, I remember, when it came out before the Olympics, and she called my sister immediately and just said, don't read the article. It's just, oh my gosh, my heart was just racing, and it made me so nervous because, you know, I think my mom gets pretty scared when I'm on the bike. A lot of things can go wrong when you're riding, and, you know, sometimes it's in your control and sometimes it's out of your control. So rightfully so, she gets nervous. I know I will be just as much of a wreck when I have a little kid. So, you know, I try to keep her protected a little bit.
How fast were you going? When you're on the back of a motorcycle.
Oh, my gosh. Too fast. I was too fast. I mean, it was like, it was insane.
And you also tried some virtual reality glasses?
Yep, that's right. So we had like the, you know, I do a lot of visualization before races, and I use the, and it was like a, it was the whole Rio course, which is pretty cool. So I could, when I was visualizing, I actually had the course. And I know, like, sometimes when I visualize, you can remember things a little bit wrong. So this is just neat to have it and actually look at it when I was visualizing. And it was 360, so you could see all the way around. You could see all the corners. And it was just, really, you know, a great way to visualize and get me ready mentally for the race.
So Olympic race in Rio. It developed Nicola Spierig, who's the Olympic gold medalist from 2012, and she's trying to get rid of you during a bike ride. And just watching that bike race, you had to be gaining confidence every lap because there was no way you were getting dropped.
You know, I had so much fun at that Olympic race on the bike. I've never had so much fun. It felt like a little cat and mouse game.
Yes.
Nicola was doing a lot of attacks, and it was just, it was interesting, the dynamics of the race. It was just interesting how it played out, I guess. You know, Nicola was, I think, you know, tiring herself out a lot.
Yep.
And, you know, doing a lot of work. And I more just was trying to stay within reach and, get to the run as fresh as possible, but in that front group. So that was pretty fun.
Pretty, really fun. And then during the run, again, little cat and mouse, right? Sort of sitting on each other. And there was a point where you're leading and Nicola is sitting right behind you. And you're running into the headwind, and you were looking for a little something, a little help. She wasn't looking to take a lead at that point, correct?
So I had led basically in like Nicola went around me, and like a minute later said, "Let's share the lead." And I said, "Well, I just led the last 2.5 laps. Like, if you want to share, it's your turn." And she just said, I already have a gold medal. And I said, "You're also a mother, and I think that's more impressive." And that was it. And I know on TV it looks like we were arguing and all that, but, you know, after the race, Nicola said publicly in the press conference,
yeah,
you know, she was trying to play mind games with me. She was trying everything possible just to kind of throw me off my game. But for me, I was just like, okay, if she wants to talk, let's talk. Like, no big deal. Like, it's not going to throw me off. So, you know, I think it just shows that she's such a great competitor, and
yep,
she really, really tried everything in her power to win. And, you know, at the end of the day, she got silver, and after, you know, she got gold, has a baby. Like,
yes,
she is somebody that I really look up to, and she's probably one of the most important people on my journey being pregnant that I really look up to. You know, I think if I would have looked back 4 years ago, there would have been no way I would have thought I could get pregnant and come back. And after seeing what she's done, it's really given me a lot of inspiration and hope. And I really respect her for that. And would love to pick her brain more about it and how to come back and win another medal.
Well, and the other thing that she has done is she gives back, right? She's got a program back in her home country. Kids Try. And you have a scholarship, right, that you're doing for young up-and-comers. That's important to you as well.
Oh, it's, yeah, hugely. A huge part of why I do triathlon. You know, I feel in triathlon I was given so much, especially early on in my career, you know, when I wasn't very good. And, you know, I want to give back. And it's been so fun. Like, we award at least 5 juniors every year. I feel like 5 is a really good number because I'm able to then keep in contact with them. You know, I text them, call them, check up on them, see how they're doing. And they just get so excited. And for them, it's like this really neat thing to talk to this Olympic medalist, and, you know, like, just a normal person. And it's just really cool to be able to have that connection and to give back and to give them some advice from what I've learned and to hear, you know, what they're going through and be able to relate and say, oh, yes, I know exactly what you're going through. You know, this is how I felt during that time too, or to be there when they have success.
So
something Patrick really enjoyed.
So usually you don't show a lot of emotion at a finish line, but in Rio, that the emotion came pouring out. What was, obviously, here you've achieved that goal, right? As a little girl, you wanted to be an Olympian. Now you're not just an Olympian, you're a gold medalist, the first gold medalist for the U.S. in the sport of triathlon. That feeling had to be really, really special.
Yeah, you know, I think it's an emotional thing for me. I mean, I had been working 4 years for it. Patrick gave up his career to support me 4 years. Jamie invested so much for 4 years. My new partners, the Wollongong Wizards, like USA Triathlon, my sponsors, like I could go on and on. Just all these people and that surrounded me and helped me win that gold medal. It was, I just felt so thankful, and I was relieved, and I was happy, and it just everything. It was amazing.
So, some of the coolest things that have happened to you since winning the gold medal.
No, I was asked this question the other day, and I have forgotten about so many things.
Yeah.
I would, because, like, for me, I have a bad memory, but then, like, the coolest thing is being able to get pregnant. But, you know,
yeah, right.
We've done some pretty neat things. Like, Red Bull let Pat and I go to an F1 race.
Wow.
I got to, go on Squawk Box and, tour New York. And I did the New York City Marathon and went to the Bahamas with Marcelo Echo and Islehouse. And I've just gotten to do so many amazing things. And I feel really grateful. And as well, I feel really grateful to have a lot of, I think another great, amazing thing is I feel like all my sponsors are very progressive in women's equality and rights. And, my sponsors have stayed with me. Specialized just re-signed me for another 4 years and ASICS.
Very cool.
And I have all these sponsors who, they know I'm pregnant.
Yes, right.
And it's really special and hopefully encouraging. I think for me, I thought if I was ever going to have a child, I may get dropped by all my sponsors. That hasn't happened at all. It's been quite the opposite. And so it's been pretty incredible to have that support. And I really feel fortunate to have sponsors that are supportive of me and of having a family and of all of that.
So in New York, you finished 14th, run 2:40.101. It's only 71 days after winning the gold medal. How tough was it to go from, you're focused everything on the Olympic gold for Olympic distance race, and now you're running 26.2 miles?
It's just different. I went into the Olympics fully prepared, and the marathon I knew I wouldn't go into it fully prepared. It was just something I've always wanted to do, and I knew I couldn't do it pre-Olympics in case I got injured or something. So it's just something fun to do, and I had a good time, yeah.
So you win Islehouse, and that comes along with 60,000, which is nice. But this year, rather than riding regular road bikes, you're riding tri-bikes. You're in aero position. That's a little different for you, especially the enduro day where you have to ride a 40K before swimming and running again. How tough was that?
Yeah, for me, I don't spend any time on the TT bike, so it's just different because you use different muscles. It's a different position. Different places get sore and don't have the muscle mass in the certain areas, and mentality is different. So, I went into that race just wanting to have fun. It is one of the most fun races I go to, just beautiful location, really well-run race. I just wanted to go there and have fun, and I was very shocked to come away with the win.
As a triathlete, everybody asks, I'm sure it happens all the time, oh, you're a triathlete, have you done that Ironman thing yet? Is that something that appeals to you at all, that 70.3 or the full Ironman? I remember interviewing Hunter Kemper, and he's like, listen, if I have to carry a gel, I'm not racing. So, does that stuff appeal to you?
What really motivates me is the Olympic dream and representing my country. And
yep.
So for me, it's, focusing on the draft legal and the Olympic triathlon.
So, and if somebody had told you back when you're finishing up your running career at Wisconsin 2009, you'd be winning an Olympic gold medal in triathlon 2016, what do you tell them?
I'd say they were pretty crazy.
That is really fun. And Gwen, when are you due?
August 3rd.
Fun. It's going to be, and you're loving being pregnant.
I've always wanted to be a mom, and just having the different experiences, and your body does a lot of changes, and it's been great to just talk to some other athletes and people that have gone through pregnancy as well, and to know that what I'm going through, everyone else is too. So it's been a really great journey so far, and hopefully continues with a healthy pregnancy.
Hey, Gwen, thank you so much for taking so much time, for what you bring to the sport. From not the winning the gold medal is wonderful, but what you're doing for the athletes who are following you, right? The athletes who want to be that next pro, who want to win a gold medal down the line, the fact that you're supporting them, that's very rare that athletes do that, especially so early in your career.
Well, thank you. Yeah, triathlon, it's given me so much, and I love giving back, and I love hearing stories of, how I've been able to hopefully inspire someone to get out and get active, and it's what really keeps me motivated and inspired as well to keep doing triathlon.
It's the best sport there is. We call it the fountain of youth, right? You can do it forever and ever and ever. That's what I love about this sport.
Hopefully.
Exactly. Gwen, thank you so much for taking so much time.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Gwen Jorgensen has been our guest. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, RunCatalina.com, 40th anniversary of the Catalina Island Marathon. Coming up on Saturday, March 11th, our Challenged Athlete Foundation. We've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes at the game of life through sport. Check us out on BabbittField.com, on iTunes. Subscribe to our Endurance World newsletter. And as always, remember, endurance lives here.